Hey everyone, ready for another deep dive? Today we're tackling a case you might not know about, but it's a big one, trust me.
Definitely a big one.
In the United States, 1997, Supreme Court. We're going deep into the weeds of the Appointments Clause, folks.
You know, Article 2, Section 2?
That's the one, and we're going to figure out once and for all what the difference is between a, quote, inferior officer.
Oh yeah, big distinction there.
And a principal officer in the eyes of the law. And why should we care?
Well, because it all boils down to power and accountability.
Exactly. So buckle up, because this seemingly obscure case has some serious implications for how our government works, even today.
And it all starts with something that seems pretty minor at first, like how were judges on a military court appointed?
You know, I'm already intrigued. So we're talking about the Coast Guard Court of Criminal Appeals, right?
Right.
And what's unusual here is that these judges weren't actually military officers themselves.
Nope, they were civilians. Civilians appointed by the Secretary of Transportation.
Wait, really? That's pretty out of the ordinary.
It is, and that's where things get interesting because, well, the Constitution has something to say about that.
The Appointments Clause you mentioned earlier.
The Appointments Clause, exactly. That's Article 2, Section 2 for anyone following along at home. It basically lays out how different kinds of officers in the federal government are supposed to be appointed. And it makes a very clear distinction between two types, principal officers and those, quote, inferior officers we were talking about.
I feel like I'm back in con law class. But seriously, can you break those two down for us? What's the difference?
Sure. Think of it like a company. Principal officers are like the CEOs.
Accountable to the board of directors.
Which in this case would be the Senate. They need that Senate confirmation to get the job. But inferior officers are more like, you know, department heads.
Reporting to the CEO.
Exactly. They are appointed by and accountable to that principal officer.
Okay, so in Edmund, the million-dollar question is, were these Coast Guard judges considered principal officers or inferior officers?
And why should we even care about that distinction?
Right, besides the whole con law geek out factor.
Well, if they were considered principal officers, that means the Secretary of Transportation didn't actually have the authority to appoint them on his own.
Because they would have needed Senate confirmation.
Precisely. And that obviously didn't happen.
Uh-oh. Sounds like we've got a potential constitutional problem on our hands. So how did this whole issue end up at the Supreme Court?
Well, it wasn't just one case that made it there.
Oh.
There were actually six. Six separate cases.
All challenging convictions based on how these judges were appointed.
Exactly. The defendants argued that because the judges weren't appointed correctly, their convictions had to be thrown out.
Whoa. This isn't just some theoretical legal debate, is it? Real people's lives were affected by this.
Absolutely. We're talking about people's freedom, so the stakes were pretty high.
And what about this Weiss case?
Ah, yes. Weiss, this actually makes the whole thing even more interesting. It turns out the Secretary of Transportation kind of saw this challenge coming. Back in 1993, he actually reappointed all of these judges.
In response to Weiss v. U.S.?
Yep. Almost like he was trying to preempt this whole challenge we're talking about.
Talk about foreshadowing. Okay, so let me get this straight. We have multiple cases, a potential appointments clause issue, a Secretary of Transportation trying to get ahead of the game. It's a lot to unpack.
It is.
So what were the main questions the Supreme Court had to figure out in this whole Edmunds situation?
Well, the court had to answer two key questions. First, did Congress even give the Secretary of Transportation the power to appoint these judges in the first place?
Right, because if not, then game over, right?
Exactly. And the second question was, even if they did give him that power, was that setup constitutional under the Appointments Clause?
Ah, okay, so that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right. Some big questions. And the answers have a huge impact on how our government works.
Well, I can't wait to hear what they decided, but I think we're going to have to save that for part two of our deep dive.
Definitely. Stay tuned, everyone. All right, so where were we? The Supreme Court and their big decision.
Yeah, those two key questions about the Secretary's power to appoint the judges and whether that was all constitutional. What did they say?
Well, get this. The Supreme Court voted unanimously.
Unanimously.
Unanimously. All nine justices agreed. They said, yes, the Secretary does have that power, and yes, this whole setup is constitutional.
Wow. Okay, I'm even more curious now. How did they get there? What was their reasoning?
Well, to understand that, we have to look at the opinion written by Justice Scalia. He kind of laid out the framework for the whole thing.
All right, Justice Scalia, lay it on us.
Scalia came up with this three-part test, and actually pretty easy to understand. The first part was all about reviewability.
Reviewability.
Yeah, so like, could the decisions made by these Coast Guard judges be reviewed by a higher court?
Hmm, makes sense. Checks and balances and all that.
Right, and in this case, the answer was yes. The Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, that was the higher court that could review their decisions.
Okay, so the judges weren't the final word. Makes sense. What was the second part of the test?
The second part was about removability. So Could these judges be removed from their position by a higher-ranking official? And importantly, could they be removed without cause?
Without cause. That's pretty significant.
It is. And again, in this case, the answer was yes. The judge advocate general could remove them, even if they didn't do anything wrong.
So it's not just about someone double-checking their work after the fact. It's about someone having the power to say, you're out, regardless of performance.
Exactly. It's about that control, that level of supervision.
Interesting. So that's two prongs of the test down. What was Scalia's third point?
Okay, the third one focused on their authority, or, to use the fancy legal term, their jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction, right.
Basically, how much power did these judges actually have? What kinds of cases could they decide? Scalia said you have to look at the scope of their authority.
Okay, so were they making decisions that affected the whole country? Or was it more limited?
In this case, it was definitely limited. Their jurisdiction was pretty narrow, focused specifically on Coast Guard-related stuff. They weren't setting national policy or anything like that.
All right, so to sum up Scalia's test, if your decisions can be reviewed, you can be removed without pause, and your authority is limited, you're probably an inferior officer.
Right. You got it. And it all comes back to that idea of accountability.
Ah, accountability. A key theme in so many legal cases.
Right. Scalia was saying that the Constitution's framers, they wanted to make sure that anyone with significant power, you know, they had to answer to someone.
Whether it's the president directly.
Or to someone appointed by the president with the Senate's approval.
Right. It's about checks and balances within the executive branch itself. That's fascinating. So these Coast Guard judges, they were ultimately accountable to higher-ups who were part of that chain of command.
Exactly. And Scalia really drove this point home. I love this quote. He wrote, "What is significant is that these judges have no power to render a final decision unless permitted by other executive officers."
Classic Scalia, so direct. No missing words.
Right. He's basically saying these judges, they don't have absolute power. There are checks on their authority.
Okay, so the Supreme Court unanimously sided with the government, said these judges were indeed inferior officers. Case closed.
Well, there's actually a little twist. Justice Souter, he agreed with the outcome, you know, that the conviction should stand, but...
There's always a but, isn't there? What was Souter's take?
He wasn't completely sold on Scalia's reasoning. He wrote his own separate opinion to kind of express his reservation.
This is where things get even more interesting. I'm all ears. Tell me, what was Justice Souter's perspective?
So Souter agreed that, yeah, these Coast Guard judges, they're inferior officers, but he thought Scalia's test was maybe, I don't know, a little too simple.
Interesting. Too simple. How so?
Well, he basically said just because someone has a supervisor doesn't automatically make them quote unquote inferior. You know, I said you have to look at the big picture, the totality of their powers and responsibilities.
So he's saying don't just check boxes on a three-prong test. Look at the whole context.
Exactly. And it kind of makes you think, what about those situations where someone might have a supervisor? Sure, but they still have a lot of power. Scalia's test doesn't really account for those nuances.
I see what you mean. Like, maybe on paper someone looks inferior, but in reality they wield a ton of influence. That seems like a really important point, especially with government roles constantly evolving and new positions being created.
It really is. And this is where that debate, you know, Scalia versus Souter, becomes really relevant.
How so?
Well, think about it. Scalia's approach is nice and clear, you know, those three factors. But when you get into those gray areas, those tricky situations, it might not be so helpful. Souter's approach, focusing on the totality of the circumstances, that might be better in those cases. But then again, it's also more subjective, right?
Oh, yeah. Different judges could look at the same fact and come to different conclusions.
Exactly. So it's tough, you know, is Scalia's test too rigid or is Souter's approach maybe a little too open to interpretation? It's that classic legal dilemma, trying to find the right balance.
I hear you. A clear rule is great for certainty, but sometimes you need a little flexibility to make sure justice is done. It's a tough one. But okay, bottom line, for us non-Supreme Court justices, what's the big takeaway from all of this? Why should we care about Edmund? It's about Coast Guard judges from like 30 years ago.
Right. But the thing is, the logic of Edmund, it goes way beyond military courts.
Really? Tell me more.
Think about all sorts of positions in the government. Special counsels, administrative law judges, even some high-level folks in federal agencies. That whole question, is this person a principal officer or an inferior officer? It comes up all the time. And Edmund gives us a framework to answer it.
So this case, it's not just a dusty old precedent. It's actually a tool we can use to understand how our government works right now.
Exactly. It helps us see how power is structured, who has the authority to make decisions, and who's ultimately accountable. And that's something everyone should care about.
Absolutely. We've talked a lot about Scalia's framework, reviewability, removability, scope of authority. But it sounds like, even with that, it's not always cut and dry. There must be some tricky situations where the answer isn't so obvious.
Oh, for sure. Like, what about someone whose decisions can be reviewed, but they have a ton of power? Or what if they can only be removed for cause, but nobody's really watching over their shoulder? Those Edmund factors, they might not give us a clear answer in those cases.
So we're back to that Scalia-Souter debate.
Right. Scalia's approach loves clarity, love those clear-cut rules. But maybe Souter's idea of leveling at the certainty of the circumstances, maybe that's better in those tough cases. But again, more room for subjectivity, you know?
Yeah, that's the trade-off. More flexibility, but less predictability. It makes you wonder, is there a perfect test out there?
Probably not. And honestly, that's what makes constitutional law so fascinating, right? You're grappling with these fundamental questions, power, accountability, how to make our system work. It's not just about applying formulas. It's about wrestling with big ideas.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Edmund v. United States, what's the one big takeaway you want our listeners to walk away with?
I'd say don't underestimate those technical details. You know, those rules about appointments, they seem boring, maybe, but they actually matter a lot. They determine who holds power in our government and how that power is limited. And ultimately, they shape how our democracy functions.
That's a really powerful point. And what I find so fascinating about this whole case is that it's not just about the past. It's about the future, too. All these questions about appointments, authority, accountability, they're even more important today.
Oh, absolutely. Think about, like, artificial intelligence. That's a big one. As AI gets used more and more in government, we're going to have to figure out who controls those systems, who's responsible for what they do. And Edmund, it gives us a framework for tackling those questions. It's like a roadmap, not just for understanding how things worked 30 years ago, but for navigating the future.
It's like Edmund gives us a new lens for looking at these emerging technologies and making sure we're using them responsibly and ethically.
Exactly. And that's crucial as we move forward.
So to all our listeners out there, especially the future legal eagles shaping the world of tomorrow, remember, Edmund v. United States, it's not just a case about Coast Guard judges. It's a roadmap for a more accountable and just future.
Perfectly said.
A huge thank you to you for breaking down this complex case and making it so clear and engaging. I learned a lot today.
My pleasure.
And to our amazing listeners, keep those deep dive requests coming. We'll be back next time with another fascinating journey into the heart of a complex legal issue. Until then, stay curious, stay engaged, and keep those legal minds sharp.